Right, chaps, welcome to the afternoon. Good to have you guys here.
Thank you. Good start. So,
good start.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to build this in would be talk about our experiences.
Absolutely.
And kind of like the health and fitness industry and our journeys, because we come from three very different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Just kind of, yeah, wing it from there.
So I guess, yeah, and I guess for all the listeners on each of our things, maybe we'll do a quick intro from everyone first.
Yeah.
Who's who. So, Dave, you want to kick off?
Yeah, so I'm Irish, obviously. Moved over here from the west of Ireland seven months ago, I think, about that, to start personal training, qualified over in Ireland, and obviously wanted to move here because there's a bit more infrastructure when you're starting off. Also, the fitness industry is a lot bigger over here. Then moved over, lived in a hostel for like a week, bummed on a couch for a week, found a place to live for a month, found a job, and yeah, I've been working over here since, and now moving a lot of stuff online, and that's why I'm here with these two guys. Kieran?
Still? Yeah, so I've been a PT for about 7 years, coming to my 7th year now. So obviously I'm a professional boxer, and it was that kind of led me into PT. So I came out of uni, and I won like the national title and stuff like that. Went into a like a proper corporate sales role, selling advertisement space in a conference news magazine. Literally wanted to like deep throat a pistol like all day, every day. Whilst I was doing that, I was giving like people, I was taking people training, like doing pad sessions and that in parks on the weekends, and also doing little like training nutrition plans for people. So then it kind of just stemmed from there. Like one of my friends was like, she's getting to PT. So I just did, sacked the job off. And by sack the job off, I got sacked.
I love when the universe pushes you off a cliff like that.
Yeah, literally. I got sacked. And then when I worked in a pub, for like the 6 weeks I did my PT quals, and yeah, went into Fitness First down in Teddington, where I used to live.
Very cool.
The rest is history.
Mine's slightly longer than that, obviously, being the older of the group. I guess the way I describe it is the fact that I come from the client side more than anything else. I've been training in gyms for about 33 years, having lifted my first weights about the age of 17. In an attempt to get fit at that young stage, over that 33 years, probably had 20 years worth of personal training from varying trainers, both here in the UK and in Australia. And similarly, kind of went through, I've been in corporate for many, many years, but always had that, you know, passion to try to get into shape that then developed into a passion of helping other people get into shape. So someone had a very similar conversation with me and said, well, why don't you start PTing? You know, coming on board with the same group that we're all in, and training with Chris, then we had that conversation, and he's like, well, why don't you come across and become a PT and get onto online training? So I did, made the leap, and here we all are.
That's funny, both of you had the conversation, why don't you go into PT? Mine was like the opposite. Everyone was saying, don't do that. Go to uni. Because like in Ireland, everyone goes to uni.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite funny you say that, because mine was the same growing up. Like I was the first person in my family that kind of that went into that sort of self-employed realm, because everyone in my life, my dad's been in the army, all the kind of men in my family have been in the army, and the women have always just had standard jobs like teachers. My mom was always like admin, and that was kind of how I was always born and raised. Was just you go to school, then you then go to college. You go to uni and you get a job.
Yep.
You work a standard 9 to 5. You go and you're a suit. So like, yeah, fuck
you get enough money. You buy a house. You get married. You buy a house.
Yeah, there's that standard kind of like social conformity, isn't there? That you kind of really pushed into, and then I guess it was really really prevalent in my upbringing as well, because my dad was in the army, and it's just like everything in life is just so regimented and structured, and you're always just pushed into that way. And now it's quite funny because loads of people in my family are self-employed. Like now my brother's got his own like recruitment business and he's smashing it. Both of my aunties have both got their own businesses, and my mum now as well, she just left her job at the hospital and has set up her own beauty business alongside with my auntie. It's just it's crazy how things are all starting to change.
I know, but being, as I said, being slightly ahead of the game, I was a bit the opposite. I kind of did go down that pathway. Well, I didn't actually. I've always been a bit rebellious and kind of, I left school very early, went straight to the workforce, didn't do university, didn't do anything like that. And I don't regret that the slightest, because I learned all my experience just through working through it, but then tried to do the working in that mindset of going, you know, get a job, yada, 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 you know, buy a house, and never did. I've always been a bit rebellious and a bit kind of taking the risk. So for me to swap and transition away from corporate into this space was mentally slightly easier, because I've always been slightly more rebellious, but it's a massive step, you know, because I really am stepping away from a conformity of, you know, high paying corporate role, and you know, trying to build a business at this age, you know, with not the experience of you guys have got, you know, it's been a challenge, to say the least. Yeah,
I think that's something three of us have in common though. And like a lot of people see that as nearly like laziness, being like, oh, you don't want to work through college, you don't want to put in the work. And I think really it's the opposite. It's wanting to actually not go down the so-called safe route and actually make something of yourself, if you know what I mean. Like, you're very limited. If you go to college and then get into a job, you're a lot less likely to go and do what you really want to do if you're stuck, if you already invested that
so
much time.
So now on that, actually, on that safe route option, because I had this conversation with my client just before this, actually, Adam, and he was just like, oh, life's a bit savage, because one of his really close friends, late 40s, was like really, like, in a really good job, was like head of an estate agent's. And they went bust. And so he's just been made redundant. And I was like, that's one thing that we'll never suffer with is like things like redundancy. Obviously, if the market flops, we can just alternate our prices accordingly to that. But there's always going to be a need for people to have the, for what we do, yeah. But then it's also one of my old clients who's now a personal trainer. She works at Sky. She was working in an office, and they got made redundant. She's like mid-20.
Well, that's it. Like, as soon as the company needs to trim the fat, you're an employee, you're gone. Like, you're going to be made redundant, which can happen. Whereas if you're self-employed, and especially with a personal trainer, it's quite a fluid business. Like, you can go to any avenue.
Correct. And you can move, you can be flexible and be online. You can do it from anywhere in the world, you know. And we're never going to get sacked because you work for yourself. You're not going to get made redundant.
But then it's also as you progress in your journey as a PT, is what I found as well, is you get so much different experience. You'll find different avenues that you really enjoy. Like, people go more into sort of like the nutritional therapy side of things. Other people go into the more physiotherapy, massage. So there's always these sorts of things, and you start specializing as well as you go through, and you kind of understand what you really enjoy doing and how you enjoy helping people the most.
Yeah.
So when you start specialising and going to those sort of avenues, you're always going
to
have...
Yeah, the more joyous to kind of... And I mean, even just niching down into speaking to certain people, you know, David, obviously you're probably looking at students and things like that. You know, I'm looking at the older corporate people. You're looking at probably sports folk and, you know, and sort of younger corporates. You know, so there's people out there for all of us.
The thing about it too is, let's say,
never gonna slow down.
Yeah, for me and Kieran, like, it was probably easier to get into the fitness industry, because when you're starting from zero, nothing to lose. Let's say you had to leave a job to get to this, so you're kind of the exception to the rule. Whereas like, it'd be very easy for me to next year go back and do the uni thing.
Yeah.
So like, whereas if I'd gone into uni first, invested all that money in it, got into a job, and then realized, okay, if I want to actually do a PT business, I'm gonna have to leave a job that I've invested quite a bit of time into. Whereas it's a lot easier for me to go back the way, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes and no, it depends on the circumstance. I think for me, you're right, I've left a very well-paying corporate job to set up this business, but I wasn't getting the satisfaction of life out of that, no matter how much money I was earning. You know, so it's been a challenging transition. I'm not going to deny that in the slightest, and I will continue to do so for a little while, I'd imagine, but I don't regret it, and I'm not enjoying it.
Oh, and you definitely shouldn't. I'm just saying, you're the exception to the rule. Most people wouldn't have the balls to make that decision.
Exactly. It was a bloody tough call.
Yeah. Whereas for me, like, I had nothing to lose when I went into this. Yeah. And if I go back to college, I have nothing to lose. Sure. If anything in Ireland, I get college cheaper if I wait till I'm 23. They pay you to go to college if you're over 23. Mature student.
I'm gonna move to Ireland.
Messed up, like.
Take my business over there.
So actually, looking at the experiences that you've had with other personal trainers, let's kind of touch on that. So what, with regards to your kind of health and fitness and your fat loss journey, because you got to a point you're quite overweight, weren't you?
Well, several times I've bounced around over the years, you know. I was one of those skinny kids, and this is the weird thing from a psychological point of view. And when people say fat loss and fitness, you know, for me fitness is all about, from an image perspective of as a kid when I started this journey in my teens and early 20s, it was about fitness sort of equated to bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And as I got older, I became more aware of the fact that it wasn't bodybuilding per se. It was much more about being healthy, being fit, sports fit, beach fit, that kind of thing. So my image changed. But as a skinny kid growing up, I was tall and skinny all the time. I used to get bullied for being skinny, not bullied for being fat. So when I did put on some weight, I didn't realise that I was actually holding that much. And I got to the point on one of my moves back around the world. So when I came, I'd been living in the UK and Europe for about 10 years or so, went back to Australia to think that was the right thing to do, jumped on the scales, and I was 120 kilos. Didn't look it. And everyone sort of looked at me and goes, I think I'm lucky that I carry weight really, really well. So I never thought I was fat or overweight. So then when I went through this transition, when I started this particular journey back in June last year, I was 96 kilos. But again, everyone's like, you don't look it. You know, so I was lucky in the sense that I didn't have to lose a lot of weight. And I didn't think, the weird thing was I didn't think I had a lot of weight to lose. But then managed to drop 20 kilos, almost 20 kilos. I was like, wow, I didn't know it. But the back to the point about being the skinny kid was, as I started dropping that weight, most people get really excited about dropping weight and get, you know, looking forward to the fact they're getting slim and it was all working. I started panicking. I was like, I don't want to be that 14-year-old kid again, or that 17-year-old kid again who's really skinny and underweight and gets bullied. And I had that vision in my head, and that's where I was headed as I started dropping all this weight and getting ready for my shoot. So when I finally got cut right down, I was at 76 kilos. You know, and that 76 kilos was the lightest I'd been since I was 17 years old. And it was a real mind screw up. Because I obviously looked very different to what I did at 17, very different. But to hit that 76 kilogram mark again, psychologically, it was a real challenge. And as I started dropping below 80 kilos, I was saying to my coach, I don't want to do it. I'm scared, man. This is freaking me out. I don't want to be skinny. He said,
do you have any self-sabotage moments with that? Oh, so, what? You know, when you started getting there, and you'd be sitting there like, what was yours then? What were your biggest, like, with regards to self-sabotage on that? So did you get like binge eating or anything like that?
No, I panic mode. And I think, you know, it's a term that people use with me a lot over the last 6 months. My head falls off quite often. And I got to get off track, and I kind of got to catch myself. And you go back to all those things that we learn, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit later on in this conversation, about things like trusting the process, you know, listen to your coach, you know, just being patient, and that it all works in the long run. I didn't binge eat or anything like that. If anything, I probably did the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, and unlike a lot of people when they're going through that, trying to get a better relationship with food, when they talk about binge eating, I'm the opposite. I'll starve. Not for the intention of losing weight. It's just I won't eat because I'm stressed or nervous. I don't eat when I'm stressed. I'm the other way around.
I'm the opposite.
See that? Yeah. This is one thing.
Now that I'm on bulky, I'm trying to eat 4,000 calories a day. If I'm stressing out, I'm struggling to eat.
See, this is one thing that I find very, very interesting. And it's like, you know, a lot of people say about genetics. It's like, oh, no, genetically, I'm just... It's not necessarily the genetic... Don't get me wrong, there's a huge genetic factor that comes into it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people have such different relationships with food. So yeah. I said this, I've got one client at the minute who's trying to bulk up.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't eat. Like, he just does not like... I'm like, how's your diet of the weekend? And normally at the weekend, people wake up, they like have a big like fry up and...
Yeah, after Sunday
just,
roast.
Yeah, and he's just stuff, like, yeah. Oh, I had lunch on Saturday and I was like...
Yeah, yeah. That's like the only meal
and
for 2 days.
And, yeah. And then he's like, yeah, yeah, just shit happened. Like, yeah. Things just got in the way and I couldn't... I'm just like, no. Wow.
Yeah. I'm the same. It's not that I don't enjoy food. I think my relationship with food has changed very differently. You know, I now look at food as fuel.
Mm.
You know, it's for me now, food is functional. I don't consider it, unless I'm going out for a nice meal with friends, or I've gone around to someone's house for dinner time, or it's an occasion, food is just fuel. It's like having my breakfast in the morning is like cleaning my teeth. You know, having my lunch in the afternoon is like, you know, doing it just another chore. It's just something that I have to do, not because I enjoy doing it.
And with that, what helped with that mindset shift? Was that your coach that gave you that? Because I guess what mine with that was always, when I'd be prepping for a fight, I had such a strong why to get in shape.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's going to be someone, if I didn't make weight, I wouldn't have a fight, I wouldn't get the opportunity to bang someone out. So it's a good why, like being quite an aggressive guy growing up. But then I'd always really struggle, because after that, if I did have a fight booked in, I wouldn't have anything to kind of look forward to. And then if I'd been, which I used to do when I was a lot younger, when I first started boxing, I used to restrict so savagely, I'd just get fat in like 10 days after. It was like disgusting how much weight I put on in a very short space of time.
I think with me, it was kind of, and people talk about resetting metabolism and all this kind of stuff, and I think there's different thoughts and different beliefs around that as well. As I said, I grew up very skinny. I was what they would call, what you'd commonly call a hard gainer or a slow build or whatever you want to call it back in my teens and 20s. I could eat anything I wanted to, I wouldn't put on weight.
Yeah.
Obviously, as I hit my sort of mid-30s and into my 40s, that changed. And again, I put on weight, but without realising I was putting on weight, and because I didn't look like I was getting big, I didn't worry about it as much. I never got that negativity towards food. I loved eating and I loved drinking, and it was fine. And it was only, so I never got to a point in relationship with food that it became something I didn't enjoy doing because it was bad for me. When I say I flipped it across to being as food as fuel now, it's because I've never had a bad relationship with food, or I had a really good one. It's just, food is just food.
Yeah.
And I still love my food. I still love eating, and I'll go out and eat it, have a great meal with friends and things. I'll go and enjoy a different cuisine or something like that. But now that it's not something that I think that I'm owed or I deserve or that I'm entitled to, it's something that is dysfunctional. You know, everyone gets in this, particularly in Western society, we get in this, you must have three meals a day sort of terminology.
Yeah.
It's almost like, it almost is an entitlement.
And every meal has to be like, there's a cassette structure of what you're allowed to eat.
Correct.
Like, and I used to love having steak and eggs. I'd be heavy in training because those are like vitamins at the start of the day with red meat.
Yeah.
I used to find it just give me a bit of energy.
Correct. And a lot of people look at me and I do the same thing. I'm eating steak and eggs now. They're like, what do you mean steak and eggs for breakfast? I'm like, yeah.
I said, trust me, that is the breakfast of champions.
Exactly, because I mean, and what you learn, and I did to answer your question before, I did learn this through my coach, is that having a high protein breakfast, so get away from the cereals, get away from porridge, get away from oats.
Stops the slump.
It stops the midday slump. Your brain functionality and cognitive function throughout the morning is so much better.
Yeah.
You're clearer. You go into lunch and do the same thing and don't have a carby lunch like bread or sandwiches or like everyone does. You know, you go to out to watching people having lunch. It's burgers, it's sandwiches, it's pastas, wraps, it's pasta, it's rice.
So you get that meal deals, crisps, sandwich. Yeah,
exactly, the same as meal deal for £1.50 or whatever.
That's it. You wake up with elevated cortisol levels and like a bit of inflammation, and then you start adding carbs to the equation, and then you just get that slump in the middle of the day that you don't need at all.
Or you get another one at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You get that 3 o'clock.
So what about yourself, actually, Dave? So obviously, as I was just saying, there, you're looking like you're cracking nick, and you say you've kind of, you're like me, like I'd just happily eat. Like if I'm bored, I'll eat. If I'm not doing anything like that, like. What about you, sir? Because now you're on, you're training with Wade as well, aren't you? So have you found that nutrition plan that he's given you different to kind of like your normal, the way you'd normally eat, sorry?
Yeah, so I've always been, like with anything, I'm either full on or full off. So even like you were saying, you go complete ham at it for months, like, or else you just not do it at all.
Yeah.
And I was always like that. So like I'd get really lean and then I'd go absolutely off the rails. And it wasn't from like a lack of knowledge. It was just like, I was that type of person. So I always had like one main focus. So I was either focusing completely on diet and training, or else I was focused on like doing like business stuff or doing something else. But yeah, I definitely had a terrible relationship with food for a long time, because it was always, food was like a reward for training kind of way.
Yeah.
Whereas now, especially having a coach where it's like, you just have to take the choice out of it. Like if I have choice, I'll just eat whatever I want all the time. Whereas if I have the food pre-made and it's just in the fridge, I'll just eat whatever's there. I'll try and probably bank a lot of it for later on in the day, because that's how I'm more hungry. But yeah, once I just take the choice out of it, I don't have to think about it. I find it a lot better.
So how do you structure your sort of standard daily diet? Like, how do you... Because you're obviously very high protein fat, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're very low carb. What about yourself?
Actually, no, mine's a lot higher carb now because that's where I'm getting a lot of my calories from. But the carb,
oh, yeah, I missed the 4,000 calories. 4,000
calories a day.
Yeah.
So it's all... And all my carbs are... And again, it's down to my coach, so I don't structure it. It's what my coach tells me to do. It's what Chris tells me to do. And it's, so most of my carbs are around my workout perimeter. So I have no carbs for breakfast, no carbs at lunch. Actually, no, it's shifted slightly. So I have breakfast first, then I'll train. Massively carbs throughout in my intra-workout. Big hit of carbs straight after workout. Carbs at lunchtime as well, and then no carbs at dinner. Not because there's no carbs at night thing, it's just because the carbs are around that workout perimeter. So that's how it's structured, but that's not my choice. That's what...
Yeah, well, I've started to do it that way anyway. It's just like structuring around the workout, because especially if you're trying to cut, obviously you want to keep nearly like when you're working out, you want to feel like you're not on a cut. It's like during your actual workouts, you're able to keep intensity high, you get more benefit from that. You'll end up burning more calories probably and getting the best out of it. But then throughout the day when you don't need them and you're not going to be going up and down with your blood sugar levels, better off just to keep it lower carb, especially when you're trying to fight off cravings.
Yeah.
So then, I would say it's just for people listening, what would be like a standard meal for you? So outside of the training window, what would you say would be a standard meal then? So if someone's like, well, how do I not have carbs at a meal?
Chicken and veg. Chicken and veg. Seriously, that's it. You know, and I
see, just meat and veg.
I've literally eaten chicken and vegetables for the last 7 months. Literally.
And it sounds
almost every meal.
It sounds scarier than it is. When you actually start eating it, you kind of start looking forward to it.
But there's so many different ways
to do it.
Yeah, but that's different ways to do it. People are just like, but there's so many different ways that you can cook. Just like, it doesn't have to be obviously chicken, but like a lean of meat and vegetable. It doesn't just have to be, you just...
But something I want to point out is,
like,
do you know when you get like Sky TV or you get one of them and you're like, oh, I fucking 600 channels now. And yet you still can't find anything that you want to watch that's on. It's the same with food. When you could literally get whatever you want, like, you're going to end up not enjoying it as much or whatever, or you'd be like, all right, I want this, I want that, and going off plan. If you actually stick to, like, the same foods for a week, I guarantee after that, food just won't be a choice anymore. It won't even be something you think about.
Well, this is it. And this, I guess, that's exactly what I meant by the fact that I'm kind of autopilot is a good term, is that I remember when I was prepping for my shoot and I got down to... the crazy 650 calories a day the week before the shoot, and then a few days out of the shoot, you know, Chris is like, what's your favourite vegetable? And I'd been on broccoli and spinach for so long, I literally couldn't think of anything else. And he said, what's your favourite vegetable? And I was absolutely stumped. I was like, what, there are other vegetables? I'd completely forgotten there are other vegetables in the world. And it was just that weird situation, because when you take choice out, you know, then you're forced into sticking to a regime, it actually becomes easier than it sounds. And it's weird talking to some of my clients who they struggle with that regime, and they struggle with that, they call it restriction, and they get restriction confused with consistency. And I think if people keep, and this relationship with food thing comes back into it, if people feel that a simple diet, i.e. simple in the sense there's not a lot of option or choice, if they feel that is restrictive, rather look at it as being the positive, being consistent, that's where their heads fall off.
So that's a huge one, actually. It's the way you frame things completely. It's that perspective, isn't it? If you perceive things as negative, then instantly it's going to have that negative connotation in your mind. Whereas if you just kind of see things as, like I say, it's just being consistent. It's just eating normally.
Yeah, don't think.
And it takes, I think also as well, when you have just quite a straightforward diet, it just makes life so much easier, because you go shopping, get the same few bits, as most people do most of the time. And then, you know, whenever you go to the fridge and that, you've always got the same sort of foods there. And it just makes, I just think it makes life so much easier, rather than having to make decisions. What do I want for dinner? Do I want this? Do I want that? I'm just like...
And think about like how much time you spend like scrolling through your phone or something. And it's like, it's because you have too much things that you can do on your phone.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to actually do a job, then you have to do something else. Whereas like, if you start taking the choice out, you know, like having set times that you can use your phone, or like having set meals like that, you don't miss it when they're gone. but it's the thought of actually doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's true, and it kind of you either get distracted, so you get distracted by food as well.
Yeah.
And it's also that thing that then some people quite often say this to them, and you tell someone they can't have something.
They want it.
They want it. Even if they've never had it before or don't have it that regularly. You know, I was never a big chocolate eater. You know, the minute I was told I couldn't have chocolate, I was just like, ooh.
Yeah.
What do you mean I can't have chocolate? And
you start associating it with like kind of,
yeah.
Oh, when I do this, I get that kind of way. Or like when I'm stressed, I start scrolling through my phone. Or when I'm in the evenings, when I'm bored, I start doing that. Or instead of doing something productive or something good, you know?
Yeah, it's the habit thing. If kind of we fall into, you know, as human beings, we don't like discomfort.
No.
You know, we'll always try to take the easiest way out. We'll try to take the simplest method, the shortest path. And the most comfortable route. So yeah, you're 100% right. You know, if you've got all of a sudden you've got some spare time, rather than thinking I'll do some more work, I'll DM some more people cold, do whatever I want, all the stuff you don't like doing, you'll decide to do something much more comfortable.
Yeah, you just have to make the habits.
Yeah, you've got to get. Well, it's just you got to make it a habit, make it enjoyable. So reward yourself. So we talked about reward a second ago. So then, if you make that plan to do something that puts you into discomfort. Make sure at the other end of that there's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like anything, any of these preps and shoots and things or boxing or whatever, you know, there's always something afterwards. And that was the biggest mistake I made when I did my photo shoot. I didn't have anything planned for straight afterwards. So I came out of that shoot with the hype of it, the emotions of it, the training, the regimentation, the structure, everything, all that stuff was built up, boom, did the shoot, then nothing.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest feeling. I literally wake up next morning and go, what do I do now? Yeah.
Everyone who does a show says the same thing.
Yeah.
You get to the top and then it's just like, where do you go from there? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you just
start going down. You've got to have the next goal. You know, it doesn't even have to be the same thing. You know, you look at someone like Wade as an example. He's done bodybuilding, he's done physique modelling, and now he's doing powerlifting. So he's shifting.
Yeah.
It's still within the realms of fitness, but he's shifting the priority. So he gets some variety, some diversity, and he has a goal to work towards all the time.
Yeah. And then means really have to live in the deficit as well.
Exactly, like the rest of us too. Unlike me. Yeah. It's very true.
On good habits then, what do both of you think about sleep? How seriously do you take it? How high do you prioritise it?
Highly prioritise, take it seriously, but get fuck all.
Yeah. Fair enough.
You know, I think sleep massively important, both for mental, you know, physical recovery. You know, scientifically you say that all the time, but in practicality, it's not always there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think particularly working in our space when we're entrepreneurial, we've got businesses to run and things, you know, we're always told by our coaches and mentors, get sleep. But then when you say, I didn't do this because I got some sleep, they're like, you're about to feel guilty the fact you actually got 6 hours sleep.
Seven, you're like,
and they're like, yeah, I only got 2 hours sleep.
And you're like,
or don't sleep. Or they go a whole weekend
true,
without, with no sleep.
At the same
sleep.
Time, it depends on your situation. Like with me and you, where we're, I do a lot of my personal training face to face, as I'm only just getting into the online realm now. So I'm up, I have clients 6 a.m. like every morning.
Yeah.
I'll always try and be in bed for 9:30. Like I'll always try and get a little half hour like reading my book.
Yeah.
That never happens. it's just one of those things that I'll always try. But then it's like what I find like this weekend, I was just so blown out. Like I was just exhausted. So me and the missus just like literally kicked it all weekend. So I was like, I don't actually want to see anyone. So went like spent the day on Saturday like walking around Windsor. But I mean, I also every day slept like 12 hours, like just like got like mad sleep. I was in bed on like 9 a.m. on Saturday.
See, I feel like, guilty if I do that. I feel massively, I know I need it, but I feel massively guilty because I, you know, I'm constantly thinking I need to do more work, need to do more bits and pieces, need to do something else. You know, sleep's a luxury, but I know I need it, but I would feel horribly guilty if I got anything more than 6 hours a night.
But as I said, like, I'm one of them all or nothing people. So I literally have it set like that. It's non-negotiable, 8 hours sleep. So like I could be in the middle of something that is life or death, and I'll literally just drop it and go to bed.
I'm sorry,
like,
mate.
I can't do that.
Someone would be on the phone to me, I'd be like, no, I have to go. They'd be like, why? I'm like, it's really important. Next thing, I just gone to bed.
No, that's good. Like, it's one thing that I am really trying to just establish and keep solid is a good sleep routine. But it's weird, though, because I find some days that I wake up, for say, go to the toilet at 3 o'clock, and then I'll lie back in bed and I'll be like, boom, I didn't update that on my click funnel, and I'm like,
yep.
And then as soon as you get that message, like, as soon as you get me, I'm like, well, look, I'm getting up in 2 hours anyway, I can do it then. I'm blind, I'm like, nah, in my head, all I've got is click for, and it's like,
my thing with that is every time I get up or anything, I will not turn the light. If I have to go to the bathroom or anything, I won't turn the light.
Never.
Well, we've got dimmer lights.
Yeah.
So worst case, like, I've put the light down. So before I go to bed, like, I normally say about 6 p.m. I get, like, I've made like a rule in the house that the lights have to be dim low. Because it's just, those little things can make a huge difference.
Well, it's things like a very dark room, no blue light beforehand. You know, I'm a shocker. I will sit there on my phone until the minute I'll get asleep.
Yeah. Do you ever done night mode then?
Yeah, it takes the blue light stuff out. But again, because I just can't stop my brain. And then it takes me hours to fall asleep. So I meditate in the mornings. And I used to, when I was shoot prepping, I used to meditate at night as well. And I probably need to get back to that routine because it did help. You know, and there was two things. At the book end of the day, either end of the day, there's two things I did at both ends. Firstly, in the morning, I'd meditate first, and then I'd journal and do gratitude and that kind of stuff and plan my day. And the other end of the day, I'd do the opposite. I then journal what happened that day. Did I achieve my targets? If not, why not? What did I learn? And then I'd do gratitude again. Then I'd meditate. Then I'd go to sleep. That massively helped.
What other kind of stuff do you put in place to help with sleep? Like, so you have light, meditation. Do you do any, like, hot, cold therapy, hot showers, bring your body temperature room, anything like that?
Cold room. I like a fresh air in my room, so my windows are almost always open, all year round.
Unfortunately, the place we live in now, we've got, like, our windows are balcony doors, so we've got a big double door, so we can't open it.
Yeah.
A bit annoying. But apart from that, our house is pretty cold as it is. So
it's because you just tighten up, pay your bills in one heating.
Yeah, but you know, it's like in London, everything's be single glaze, isn't it?
Oh, ours is absolutely boiling all the time. Because we're on the ninth floor. I think everyone below us must have the heat on. We haven't turned on the heat yet.
No, we're in a top floor. Seriously? Our heating turns off about 9 o'clock. So then by the time it comes to, like, when they go to get them to bed, it's not warm, but... like, it's cool enough. But I just find all the hot cold therapy and all that sort of shit, it might make the 1-2% difference. I take ZMA. I think I've got a little bit of a placebo effect. So I'm like, if I don't take my ZMA, I won't sleep. I've just got this weird, like, thing now. So I just call them like my little sleepy tablets.
Yeah.
And then so I got my girlfriend taking. She's like no interest in health, fitness or anything. She thinks like the way I eat at times as well. She's just like this bizarre.
Chicken and broccoli.
But every now and again I like to tell her, she's like, oh, can I have some of those little sleeping tablets? I remember the first time I gave it to her, she woke up, she was like, what the fuck do you give me last night? I was like, why? She goes,
awesome.
I feel amazing, but my dreams.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My dreams are insane. Like, could you
sleeping deeper or something?
No, but see, if she didn't have zinc or magnesium, like, or whatever the other one that's in it, iodine, I think, is the other thing that's in it, in the ZMA, you don't get into your deep sleep. So then it's like your brain is really deprived of, like, your REM sleep where you actually dream. It's like alcoholics when they get off alcohol and they actually get into deep sleep. It happens with like caffeine and everything, and you get like them delirium tremens where you get really lucid dreams. So it's probably something like that effect.
That's a good thing to touch on as well. Alcohol. Ooh. What are your relationships like, and how has that kind of changed, especially for you actually coming from a corporate background? And
it was tough. I mean, because for me, alcohol always was associated with social, being social, and still is. And I think there's, so I went through a couple of phases. When I hit that 120 kilogram mark back in Australia, when I went back about 10 or so years ago, I managed to, the one thing I changed when I realized I had to lose some weight was I stopped drinking alcohol for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Didn't change my exercise, didn't change my diet. And I dropped 11 kilos in 6 weeks just by stopping drinking. So clearly there's an association with alcohol and weight gain or weight loss or carrying fat or carrying weight. This time around, it was kind of, and again, a bit like David, it's all or nothing. I have to go all or nothing on the booze as well because I've been drinking for years and I can't have one beer or one glass of wine. Doesn't work. Just doesn't work. So I had to I had to make a call. It was like something had to, I had to sacrifice something. And I couldn't, I found it very hard to then socialise without drinking. So I had to stop socialising. That was probably not a great thing. You know, I've potentially lost some friendships over it and been out of touch with people and things, but I know that I need to get better at willpower when I am socialising. And I have done it. That period of time in 6 weeks in Oz when I was doing it, I used to go out still and be able to drink soda and lime and didn't worry about it.
Mm.
This time around, I think because there's so much pressure on diet and training and everything else that was going on, to then try to socialise and not have the, or have the willpower to not drink, that was tough.
Yeah.
So I had to stop socialising.
I find that really interesting that even at like 50, it's the same thing. Whereas like my excuse, like with all my friends are in college, so they're all big drinkers yeah. now. But then I'm like, well, it's not going to go away. So
it's a very, I think it's a very British thing as well, though. I think
an Irish.
Well, yeah, well, even, yeah, maybe UK or UK Ireland, European thing. Well, more so the British Isles, I think, because I mean, Australia are big drinkers, we're big boozers, but not, I don't think nearly as bad as the Brits are. You know, in particularly in London, everything is associated around drinking.
But Australia don't have pubs, obviously.
Well, no, not as, not to the extent of London. No,
I know, but so yeah. when I met one of my friends when I was over in Melbourne, I met my mate Paddy. So we're friends from uni, and all we ever used to do was just get lashed together.
Yeah.
And so he messaged me. He's like, oh, we'll go out for brunch tomorrow. And so I kind of told my missus, because me and my missus had planned, she was meeting some of her friends, and we're going to kind of meet for like late lunch dinner.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'll message you when I'm there, because I don't know how this is going to go. I was like, I don't know if brunch just means like a boozy brunch. I was like, or not. I was like, I've no, I was like, this is Paddy.
Brunch,
I was like,
brunch so is normally me.
From
booze.
What I remember, I was like, yeah, from what I remember, if this is Paddy, it's like, I'm going to be crawling out of that place at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
I was like, so I don't know what will happen. And yet it wasn't. It just, it literally met out for brunch. And I was like, I feel very sophisticated. And I was like, really? I don't know if it's that. I was like, maybe we are just getting old.
Well, you know, I think that's it. Maturity does come into it. You know, I kind of, and to be honest now, and I say this now slightly flippantly, but I don't enjoy drinking that much anymore. And not so much the drinking itself, it's the afterwards.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, because we're so busy throughout the week and things, and you know, constantly busy, I hate losing time. I've just said that I don't like sleeping a lot because I feel guilty.
Yeah.
The thought of me losing it like I used to do, go out on a Friday night and then get up at 3 o'clock on the Saturday afternoon, 4 or 5 hours of doing something, and then out again Saturday night, same again the next day, you lose an entire weekend.
Yeah.
Well, I can't do that anymore. I don't like losing that time.
We're not a Monday to Friday now either. Like,
not at all. So
you can't really.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah, I work Sundays as well. So it's not like Saturdays is my only day off. And that's only been imposed by my girlfriend. She's like, we're having a lie-in together one day. And I'm like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that's very much been the same for me. Like coming through uni, all my closest friends there, we just go out and just get lagging all the time. Whenever I meet them, that's what it is. It's always just beers. You always meet around a very alcoholic based event.
I guess that's why it's good to have like a group of friends like this, where we come to meet up to like get work done. Yeah. But then you also have friends who you associate with going out just on the lash.
But it's like we say with where you lost friends. I've lost quite a, not lost, but like I'm not nearly as close to a lot of friends that I was really close with when I was at uni because of that. And it's the thing, like obviously when, before like PT and that, I was so focused on my boxing, so I've always been good with that, like 6 to 8 weeks before a fight, it's like I won't drink. Like I become so focused on that, and they'd be going out every bloody Friday, Saturday night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, getting lashed. It's like I can't do that because I need to be up at 7 to go for my morning run, and then I've got like normally have like a sparring session or something at 10 o'clock. Like training full time, you just don't get that opportunity. So I just cut loose from that, or I'd go out for an hour.
What's the it's a like, change of priorities, right? It's the social aspect of getting lashed and having hangover stuff suddenly is less important than working towards a fitness goal, or working towards a training goal, whatever we're doing, or business goal. You know, your priorities shift slightly.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't have the time to waste feeling hungover and sorry for myself.
Yeah,
you know, true. And it's true what they say, as you get older, it's harder. I can't drink like I used to do at all. I'd literally go for weekend benders, out on a Friday night, back home on a Sunday. Can't do that. And then go to work the next day quite happy.
I'd even get to the point I'd go out till
I used to be able to go out till on a Sunday night. I dare say I say this. Go out on a Sunday night till 7 a.m. on a Monday morning, go home, shower, change, go to work.
I believe
it was only about 4 o'clock in the afternoon I started feeling a bit shitty, and then managed to scrape through the next couple of hours, then go home and I'd be fine. But it was just
no, I'm the world's worst.
I could not do that. There's absolutely no way I could do that now.
Oh, see, I still don't get them. Like, not that really drinking or, but I've never suffered with hangovers. So I could literally go out in the lash for 2 weeks straight.
No way.
And I'd probably just my body would start going, I'm gonna fight you. But that's it. Like, I don't get hangovers at all.
You're so lucky. That's just, oh man, I. Oh.
I went out the middle of December with one of the lads in London for like before Christmas, before we went home. I got such a hangover. I was like, all right, I have too much work to do over Christmas and stuff. I'm not going drinking.
Well, I can have 2 or 3 drinks now and I get drunk, rather before it used to take me a lot.
It wasn't even that
I'm like still notoriously a lightweight from, I'll have like 2 drinks, I'm like, woo!
Yeah.
I'm like a 2-can Van Damme, I call it. 2 cans of something ninja choice. Yeah, that's
it. I was the opposite. There was a time I could do a whole bottle of Jack Daniels in one night.
Jeez.
On top of beers and wine.
But even after I took that break off, I went for like one night there, maybe 2 weeks ago. The guys were over from Ireland. They went drinking for like 4 days straight when they were over. I done one night with them. And they woke up the next day like completely fine. I slept till 3 a.m. I thought I was going to get sick if I lifted my head off the pillow. I was like, oh my God, I'm getting too old, too young.
It's bonkers, isn't it? I think it's an age thing, but I mean, you yell at it, you're getting too old. What are you, 21? I think it's just a priority shift thing. It's interesting watching, and it's interesting you say that, like 20-year-olds now, you know, there seems to be a shift in that younger generation of people not going out and getting boozy anymore. It's not nearly as prolific as it used to be. It doesn't seem like it is.
What do you recommend to your clients?
Booze-wise?
Alcohol, yeah, because obviously I'm guessing yours are a lot more sort of...
Yeah.
Older corporate. All of mine are corporate as well. So what do you say to...
I'd say, look, you know, unless they've got the willpower and the strength and the commitment to do so, don't try to cut it out all at once. It's too difficult if they're used to it. Particularly a lot of them doing, and I've done it myself, corporate functions and travel and work and meetings and things like that and networking events. You know, booze is always a part of it. I tell my clients just to be very wary of it. And from a calorie intake point of view, minimize it as much as possible. So, you know, strongly suggest off beers but onto white spirits, you know, and diet mixes.
Bank calories. Or low-cal mixes. Sort of
banky calories / you know, get the bulk of your calories in. One of my biggest tips is something I did myself is I'd eat quite one of my larger meals before I went out.
Yeah.
So therefore, I had no calories left to have, but also I was full, so I didn't feel hungry. Whereas if I did the opposite and go, okay, I'll bank my calories and not eat during the day so that I had more calories to spend over the booze, I'd end up drinking too much.
And then eating afterwards.
And then eating afterwards with a kebab on the way home at 3 o'clock in the morning, that kind of stuff, which ruins it. But, you know, and the thing with alcohol, and this is again what I try to explain to my clients, is not all calories are made equal. So alcoholic calories are absolutely useless. Unlike carbs or protein or calories come from nutritious food, calories that come from alcohol serves no purpose.
Yeah.
Your body can't use it off as energy. So what the body has to do, it has to get rid of it first.
Yeah.
So it spends all its time getting rid of all these useless calories, gets no benefit from it whatsoever, and then starts chipping into the calories you should be using to either get energy or eat, get energy or fuel. And then burn it accordingly. But alcohol is such a, you know,
its own macronutrient. Really.
There's no macronutrient. It's pure. It's sugar. You know, there's nothing in it. But not even good sugars.
It's not the same as carbohydrates. It's like 7 calories per gram or something. It's its own thing. It can only be broken down.
It can only be broken down one way. Exactly right. That's what I mean. The body recognizes alcohol, so it has to get rid of it first.
It's essentially poison.
And so I try to educate my clients around that, to answer your question, and kind of say, look, you know, I can't tell you to stop drinking. You can choose not to, and it'd be great if you did, because it would be more beneficial for you, but just be aware of it. Or I'll do that, give them top tips, as like, as I said, your carb load, or not carb load, your calorie load or calorie save. You alternate, which is what I quite often do. I'll do vodka, lime and soda, lime and soda, vodka, lime and soda,
yeah,
lime and soda.
That's one of the biggest things actually I find for myself when I go out, because I get lagging so quickly, and people always like drag you into rounds. It's like, whenever get to me, I just get myself a Diet Coke,
yep,
and like, rather than a rum and Diet Coke,
yeah,
it's gonna save you a bit of money as well when you're buying yourself drinks.
Exactly.
And the thing is, you underestimate, like, you get to that point when you're pretty drunk, and it's like, you know, you probably don't really need to keep drinking.
Not at all.
Because when you do, you just start absolutely like lagging. You sort of like, it's like, you don't need to
get lose that functionality, that don't you? Yeah. You lose functionality. You lose kind of control of inhibition slightly, and you know, it can be fun, don't get me wrong. I mean, we've all been there. I think we've all partied and had a great time at the end of it. And, you know, what's the great line is, you remember the nights out, not the nights in.
Yeah.
You know, we've all had some fantastic times from a lifestyle point of view. But I just think if you're serious about your fitness and your health, which obviously in our space we all have to be, you've got to weigh up the balance between what's worth it, what's not worth it.
I was having this conversation with one of my clients, and he runs a lot. He tracks and measures everything,
yep.
So he's very, very rigid with it, even to the point he will tell me how his like blood pressure's improved, wow, over the course of time we've been training, how, yep, his like resting heart rate and all this sort of stuff, his stress level, all like, measures everything to the T, and he's lost quite a lot of weight, and his weight has fluctuated. I mean, I've trained with him for years, and his weight has fluctuated. And the times that we got down to the best, to his best weight, was again, yeah, when he didn't cut drink out, because he's got like a weird, not weird, but he struggles with alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like he's got a slight dependency with it.
Yeah.
And so we're having this conversation end of last week, and that's what he was kind of saying. He's trying to just limit himself to two drinks a day.
Wow.
Like, he's like. He randomly went out the other day when he was on holiday with his wife. Like he's a much older man. I mean, he's he's late 50s.
Yeah.
He's married. And he said he went out of his missus, just got smashed. Like,
yeah.
And he's to the point in the morning, his wife's like, "What are you doing?" Because he couldn't get out of bed. He was so hungover. She's like, "Why do you have to get so drunk?" And I was like, she got a little bit drunk.
Yeah.
But he got like bollocks. And he's just like, I don't know why I keep doing this. And then when we were having this talk, and I was like, you understand that if you're having two drinks a day, so he normally, because he likes it when he gets in from work, he'll have a drink, like a gin and tonic. And it's a three-pour gin and tonic. So I was like, so you're probably, say you're going to have around, on average, anywhere between sort of 400 and 600-700 calories. You add that up over the course of a week. Yeah. And I was like, say the average fat loss, like pound of fat loss is 3,500 calories. Yeah. I was like, you're hammering all of your hard work that you do in the gym with your diet. Right. And it's like, if you just cut out that one little thing, just for a short amount of time.
Exactly. Even if he does 5 days of the week with nothing.
Just go for the week. And that's what my thing was, go for the weekends. And when that's what he managed to do before.
Yeah. I guess the danger is that they go nuts at the weekend here. They've got lots more up their sleeve. But when they don't, you know, and the idea is if he's normally doing two a day, 7 days a week, then drop 5 days a week and still just do two a day on the weekends, rather than going, okay, well, I've actually got 10 up my sleeve, I'll have 10 a day.
And then not only that, but then track it. Yeah. So like you say, with calorie borrowing, save up 1,000 calories or something for the weekend, but actually track your drinks.
Yep.
And plan, like that's what I do, is I plan around that. So I plan maybe a bottle of wine in for a night out, but then when you're having that your each glass of wine, have a pint of like water or sparkling water there. It's going to fill you up a little bit more. Exactly. And just make sure you keep drinking that.
Yep.
So that you're not just drinking your wine glass.
Well, it keeps you also hydrating, and that's what obviously causes a hangover, is that dehydration. So that if you're not used to drinking and you drink more than you normally would when you're not drinking as much, then you'll get that hangover faster. But if you alternate it with water, it doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah, and then on that, it's like we were saying, now I can't not drink rapidly. Yeah. Like, yeah. I can't just sit down and savor things. It's like,
yeah.
I'm so fast paced in everything I do, and I'm always rushing through life, which isn't a good thing, which is one thing I want to address. Yeah, that doesn't help. But then I think so that's why it's good to have a drink like that. So that's what I do now. If I were to go out and my missus is like, oh, I want to have a glass of wine with dinner, like, I'll do that. I'll have a small glass of wine, but I have a pint of water there so that when I feel myself wanting to grab it, I'm like, well, she can drink like nicely slow. So I try and keep up with her, like drink for drink. But when I want to drink, I just have to drink the water.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I just end up smashing off a bottle and she's probably done a small glass. And it's just like...
Yeah. I know. It's just, it's why I know it's a weakness of me that if I get on it, I'll get on it quickly and hard and go fast and go nuts on it.
So it's just our personalities. That's why we're in the job we're in, I guess.
Well, exactly. It's a social thing as well. You know, it's fun. You know, it's fun, and you kind of you keep up with everybody else and have a bit of a laugh. And before you know it, you've gone through way too much.
And it makes you worse at socializing when you are sober. When you get into that habit of having a drink every time you go out socialising.
Yeah, it's interesting having done it where I've been out when I haven't been drinking. So again, that time when I was back in Australia, I did 6 weeks without it. It was quite weird to be completely sober while everyone else was trashed.
Yeah, it's quite funny.
It's really funny. It's actually like you're realizing you're on the new drug. You're the one that's different, and it's kind of like, this is really weird. It's kind of, and it got to the point where it was like kind of cool. It was kind of cool. It's like, okay, how's this going to feel this week?
I thought the best it was that you realise just how much, like, people turn into ball bags. Like, people just act really stupid. Like, and you're sitting there, you're like, but there's only things you'd notice because it probably seems so normal when everyone's battered, just weird little things people do. You're like, what is going on?
I know, or you listen to people's language or you watch how they're stumbling around or whatever, and you look at them and go, God, is that me normally?
Yeah.
And it is, because people you don't notice you do it.
People bark at you and they, like, dribble on you and you're like, what is going on here?
You notice it when you're working a bank.
Yeah.
Oh, I have. We've all worked pubs, haven't we? So we know what it's like.
I was like, oh, jeez, I've probably been like this myself. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
And it's like... You have like those conversations with people. You can tell they've just come back from the toilet, being a bit of nosebag, and they'll come back and they'll talk at you, and so you'll be talking to them for 15 minutes. But it's like you have no input on this conversation.
No,
they literally just bark at you and they leave, and they're like, was that a conversation, or was I just told about
exactly
something he's thinking about?" And it's like you sit there and just go, "Duh," and you're like, "Okay," and they walk away. You're like. Was I involved in that?
It's crazy, isn't it? We've all been on the other side of it. We've been the one doing the barking. So, or you get the situation where you have a conversation with someone and they say the same thing over and over.
That's when you know someone's getting drunk.
For about 10 minutes. It's like, you just said that.
Even someone that's like holding it together quite well.
Yeah.
You can tell when they start getting really drunk because that's it. The repetition comes in. Yeah. And they'll say it again. Yeah. And then it'll come up again and you're like...
I'm possibly the worst storyteller ever. Like, I repeat myself 10 times. Not even when I'm drunk. When I'm sober, I just keep repeating myself.
Too funny. Oh, so what's so putting booze aside, what's the big goals this year for you guys for 2020? What are we smashing out this year?
Boom.
Well, actually, one of mine relates to drinks. That was waking up happy every morning. So that's one of my worst times this morning. So if I don't get my sleep or if I don't get everything right for waking up, I don't wake up that happy. So that was one of them for me. That's kind of why I kind of cut out.
So what are you putting in place?
What makes you do that? Yeah.
One of my biggest ones for that, right? I put a little YouTube video about this, and it's my three things to like to champion your day.
Yeah.
And if you wake up, like sometimes you wake up and you're just on the wrong side of the bed and you're like, don't fucking talk to me. Like, get up, like have a shower. Like, don't have to do like a cold shower, whatever. Like, on most days, I'll have a cold shower, not because I'm Wim Hof and this bullshit. I just don't like hot showers. Like, my missus loves a roast, and I can't. They just stress me out. I don't know why, but so I like a lukewarm shower, but most days I have a cold one. It just really wakes me up. But if I wake up and I'm really stressed and I can't get myself out, what I do is I put on the cheesiest song. I told the wish doctor, and then you sing along and you just have to get into it and sing, and trust me,
you cannot
not smile and you cannot not laugh. So if you ever have a moment like that, you just sit there and go like, ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, like I start smiling now, just like thinking about it. Like,
sorry, I wasn't expecting that as a top tip to feel good in the morning.
Put it on as loud as you can and just jump around singing something like that. And trust me, that will fucking pick you up. And you'll just be like, yeah.
To be honest, for me, it's like literally when you wake up, just knowing that you have all the stuff done from the day before and just that you went to bed on time so that like you're getting up at the right time. That's mainly what it is for me. And knowing like I've got quality sleep, so not like drinking caffeine too long before bed and drinking alcohol. That's kind of what I do to keep that goal going. Then obviously making 100k this year.
Yeah.
Oh, good man. Good man. Yeah, going for the six figures.
Yourself?
Way away from that.
It's really weird because mine literally changed on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah.
You know, there's ambitions and things. Six figures would be lovely to earn six figures this year. And it's not... And I know from a logical point of view and a practical point of view, that wouldn't be impossible. I'm also at the point, I said this to a couple of mates these days, that being a little bit later in life, I've done a lot of the stuff I want to do, and I kind of feel that if I keep asking for anything else out of life, that I feel a bit guilty about asking for more, because I've had a pretty bloody good life so far. So for you, I guess it may end up it result in a six-figure payout, but my goal is to just impact as many people as I possibly can this year in some way, shape or form, whether it's through my business, whether it's through helping fellow masterminders, whether it's just helping friends out. You know, I just want to be an impact for people now. I think, as I said, I've taken so much out of life over the last 50 years, I just want to give back. I still don't quite know what that looks like. But that's the big one for me this year, is to find out what that looks like and how I can be the most impactful person I can in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
I'm still on a journey of discovery from that point of view. Otherwise, it's things like I am going to compete this year.
Is that definitely happening?
Definitely happening. I'm getting on stage.
When are you looking at doing that then?
July or September. It all depends on the condition. I think the plan is roughly kind of check the condition out in May, mid to end of May, see what it'll look like, and then go, right, can I cut down fast enough for a July show? Or do I have to do a longer prep and go through to September?
4,000 calories, if you drop down to 3,000 for about a month, you'll just...
He'll drop me down to two.
Or even that, like, you just, that fat just fall off you. Yeah.
I mean, the nice thing was, you know, when I was in shoot-ready condition last year, which was at the same time as one of the shows, you know, Chris, my coach, said, yeah, you could easily have competed, it would have been fine.
Mm.
So I know what to expect now. But I want to be a bit... I want to have a bit more size on me in a good way before I get on stage. So, yeah. July or September, all depends on the condition in May. That's the plan.
Exciting.
What
about you, Kieran?
Well, I want to do just a little photo shoot in March. Do that and obviously get my brother, who's getting married then, getting him... I mean, his shape's like dramatically improved, but I want to get him like filthy shape for his wedding.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of mine be kind of come back to what you were saying about, I want to help at least say 20 people really, not just get in good shape, but get in amazing shape. So shape that they're truly proud of. So that's kind of my goal for the year, is to get 20 people in like phenomenal shape.
Yeah.
Which then I know that benefit my business hugely as well. And then with regards to income, I want to be take the stress off my girlfriend. My girlfriend earns good money. She's got a very stressful job though, and it's take the stress off her, so she doesn't need to work as such, or could just get a job that's a lot more easy going for herself. So obviously we just bought a house. Obviously get Squidward in there and get a dog.
Yeah.
That is what I aim to do. Get the dog.
I miss having a dog.
Get my little running buddy.
Yeah, nice one. Nice one.
And then sort of like giving people something to take home. So what would be the three biggest sort of points or three like focuses for people listening to take away that they should focus on to basically improve their lives, how they feel, how they look. Like, I guess a little generalized health and fitness 3-pointer.
The very first thing I would say this to everybody is have a goal.
Yeah.
You know, don't just bumble along thinking, you know, saying I want to be fit isn't good enough. You know, because you'll just bumble along and not put a plan around it. So have a goal. and set a target, you know, whether that's a weight, whether it's a shape or a size or a dress size or, you know, what you want to look like in front of a camera or a photo shoot or a comp or a holiday or a wedding. I think
that is so underrated.
Have a goal and an end date.
And be very specific with it as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one. The second one, I think, for me is once you've set that goal, and we all say it, you get help. You know, I've done this kind of stuff long enough now that it's fucking hard to do it on your own. It's hard enough doing it with help, but having help and having, whether it's a coach, a mentor, a friend or whatever, absolutely get help to hold you accountable, to make sure you're on keep you on the track, give you some advice and guidance, some tough love every now and then or a pat on the back every now and then. And then that third one is just obviously the same thing I'll say to everyone as well, is trust the process.
Mm.
You know, just trust the process. Your head will fall off. There will be dark days. It will be tough times. There will be things you look at and go, oh, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I doing this? And you want to give up. Don't.
Yeah.
If your why is strong enough, well, I mean, that's the fourth one. If you're on this fourth, is have a good why, but that's attached to the goal in the first place. But if that's strong enough, just keep going.
Yourself?
People are capable of a lot more than they think. Make sure that you set goals a lot bigger than what you think you're able to do, because I guarantee you will be able to if you really want to. Be grateful for what you do have, but don't ever settle. Always try and improve. There's always somewhere you can get better. And as Brad said, just get help, get a coach, get a mentor. Just be careful about the five people you surround yourself with, because you become the product of them. Yeah, it's my three.
Yeah, what about you, Karen?
I'll move around into more of a very sort of like mindset based and goal. Obviously, I completely agree with the sort of goal and the why. But the biggest thing I'd say is consistency. So looking at, obviously, you know, the kind of main pillars of health, your like diet, hydration, exercise, sleep, sort of those things. Just be consistent with all of those, like, consistently eating good quality food. Yeah, have your treats and stuff, but being consistent with that. Don't fucking fluctuate. Only eat like a Rice Krispie bar one day and then thinking a salad, eating a salad the next day is going to completely outdo just a whole shit diet. Like, one salad doesn't get you slim and healthy, one fucking burger doesn't get you fat. It's just about doing things consistently and that compound effect. Same with training. Just find a form of exercise and training that you enjoy. Yes, not everyone likes to just go and sit in a gym and do bodybuilding style training. So don't do it. Go and find anything. Yeah. Go and do boxing, swimming, dancing, body Zumba, pump. Whatever.
Yeah.
Just find something you enjoy doing and just go out there and do it. And then, yeah, same again would be like sleep and on those aspects. Just nail it down.
Yeah.
Try and consistently sleep good. Just be fucking happy. Yeah. Enjoy life.
Enjoy life.
So after all that drama with Kobe Bryant, you never know when your number's up. So make the fucking most of the life you live and make the most of today, because you genuinely never know when your number isn't up. Exactly. So on that positive note.
That positive note. That's a fair point, mate. Well said. Good stuff, guys. Well, thank you so much. It was brilliant.
Great to talk to you both. Thanks for...
Bye.
Oh, it's a bit of time, slow.